Oh, so I can join him as a presenter?
Okay, and now, can he join and record from that side?
That's what we're gonna work on.
Okay. So they'll join, they'll record over there.
We're gonna try something else over here.
Okay. Okay, so I'm gonna turn now to the blog post, and kind of step through this. Because this is kind of where I got to in thinking about what this is all about. So my style of blog posting, this is the so-called 26-minute reading blog post. And so it goes pretty quickly. I'm going to go down, firstly, with this question about, and this is responding to the bookcase thing about what is system science? And so
it's an overview of system.
Overview of system science. Excuse
what
me.
Is.
Yes. Yes. Which is
a be very careful about that.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
And so in the blog post I'd written previously on this, I talked about this a little bit, and I fleshed out here. But the history was as opposed to trying to figure out what system science is, going back into the history and figuring out how it evolved. And so what I wrote in the other blog post, what I discovered was Russ Acuff in the article, he was talking about, Russ Acuff had written this article called The Future of OR is in the Past, or something like that. And then 10 years later, he was asked by the OR Society to comment on that. And then he started writing about the formation of the program that he found at University of Pennsylvania on social system science. So he created social system science as a program. He said he specifically named it in a clumsy way because it was the only thing he could get through the program people would agree with. And so he had this program at University of Pennsylvania called social system science. And at the same time, about that time, he was also president of the Society for General Systems Research. And so I'm not going to say that one is on top of the other, but there is a coincidence about the rise of system science, because before there was a International Society for the System Sciences, if you go back look at the references, I don't think anyone actually used the term system science per se. Jennifer, you can correct me if you think anything different, but...
I think in Bertalanffy's General Systems Theory book, when he said what we need is and system science systems philosophy,
systems. Yeah.
You know, I think... Yeah. Might have used it there.
But I think it's actually a science of systems is what I've seen.
May I make one example? Because Bertalanffy actually called it Systemlehre, and Lehre in German is less than a science or something. It's like something a little like vocational training.
Oh. Right.
So he understood that it's, he believed it's lower down. So, but that we don't have an equivalent in English.
Okay.
Sub-science.
So the article that I pulled out of here, and this quote from Acuff, actually talks about systems thinking. And so I've had this personal thing myself, and so the reason I blog is I discover stuff that I blog about it, is that Acuff himself doesn't appear to have used the word system science. He preferred to use the word systems thinking. And I always wondered why that was. And so at his 80th birthday party at Villanova, it was Russell Acuff and the advent of systems thinking. And so, you know, there's another point. And so you end up with the question about what is systems thinking, which is why I went back in the original, you know, in that one slide about what he wrote in 1981 with what he thought systems thinking was. And actually then he says down the bottom here that science and the humanities aren't separable, and so the study of systems is part of science. So he's creating words, and this one didn't take off. So, you know, that's kind of the history. Adding on to that, now he did write, "The pursuit of truth is the function of science." Okay, if that's helpful to anybody. And wrapped up in that, he wrote, "Truth is one of the four ideals from ancient Greek philosophy. The other ones are good, beauty, and plenty." And then Acuff actually came into, I mean, he didn't invent the term problematique, but the idea of a system of problems. So he wrote a book called The Art of Problem Solving. But when you're solving something that requires a systemic solution, what you're trying to do is generally dissolve a problematique. not solve, right? So you end up with all this sort of stuff. Now, the disciplinary lens, and this gets back up into this part where he was talking about that, in effect, science tends to be disciplinary because people get into organizations, and he was criticizing universities and people get into all the different departments, stuff like that. It can lead you into this type 3 error, which is the error of solving the wrong problem precisely, or the probability of solving the wrong problem to solve the right problem. And so we have this kind of cluster of people. We have Mitroff, we have Acuff, and Acuff studied under Churchman, although they were only about 5 years in age apart. And so this kind of this group of a system of ideas that is close, but actually there are differences between Acuff and Churchman and these sorts of things. So that's me trying to unravel the question of what is system science. It's kind of like, I'm not going to define it, but you know, systems thinking, these people defined it in this way, and as we can move on from there. So then trying to think about science, I went into this breakdown, and I've done a little bit of addition, but I try and mostly do the summarization, where we go back to the ancient Greeks, and thinking about what is science. This isn't even the systems part, this is just the science part. And so the Greeks have three categorizations from Aristotle: episteme, techne, and phronesis. Episteme is, and the way you interpret it, is science, like epistemology, right? Techne is somehow related with arts, but I'm going to say actually like technique is derived from that. But think about it as craft, right? So there's a craft to doing things. And then you have this idea of phronesis, which is interesting and translated as prudent or common sense. And so the interesting question to me, and this is one you can discuss in your groups, is what is it that systems engineers want out of system science? So, you know, are they looking for episteme? Are they looking for technique? And actually, are they looking for phronesis? Because I think what I sense, you know, talking to Jack Ring and some of the people that have been around for a long time, is you have all these engineers who've gone through school, or they're very young, or they're novices, or things like that. And so they already have some scientific knowledge and they have technical knowledge, but in some respects they may lack what are called practical ethics. Okay? The way I try to summarize this is that episteme sometimes is known as know why. Okay? And techne is sometimes known as know how. And so based on what I know of phenomenology, I'm proposing, in addition, and this is the layman's definition of this, phronesis is know when, know where, and know whom. Because this is in context. And so the orientations here, episteme, you do research, techniques oriented towards production. Phronesis is practical action, and so this is a human action, right? As you go through some of the stuff that's down below, you end up with the natures and kind of go through the natures. What is he trying to do with this? So with episteme, trying to cover the universal truths. And so episteme goes back to Plato, and we start talking about episteme, they're talking about things that are not changeable. With techne, an instrumental rationality towards a conscious goal. So methodologies and stuff tend to fit under techne. Phronesis, and this is the interesting part of reading this, is that there are values in practice based on judgment and experience. So I think that a lot of people, when they read about phronesis, they focus on the judgment and experience, but the fine point here is actually the values, okay? So the way I think about this, let me tell you the story I've written down here. So I normally go to a Chinese doctor, Dr. Lam, and Dr. Lam is trained both in Western medicine and Chinese medicine. And so when he gives me explanations, he can tell me, in the Chinese system, this is what I'm trying to, this is what I've diagnosed is wrong with you. He can also tell me in the Western system that this is the problem, okay? And I've recently started going to a traditional Chinese practitioner who gives you the herbs. This is a guy in Chinatown, right? And when I go to him, he gives me the herbs, and you take it home and you boil the herbs and stuff like that. Dr. Lam is different. But they both have this diagnosis when you use three fingers and they take your pulse and stuff like that. And actually I find that the guy in Chinatown is better. Like, he's going and feeling me, he says, you have a cough. And I have a cough. He said, you have a cough. I said, yeah. And you have a headache in this part of your head. And I go, yeah. And that's even better than Dr. Lam. That's better than Dr. Lam. However, when I ask him, what's the real problem? He has zero answers. And so Dr. Lam, because he is Western trained and trained in traditional Chinese medicine, demonstrates to me epistem, which is what you learn if you go to university, techne, he can take my pulse, and phronesis, because he actually understands me. So he asks, what, you know, you're doing a lot of traveling, you know, you have a lot of stress in your life, this sort of stuff, is trying to understand this. But when I go to the traditional Chinese medicine, the guy in Chinatown, he has no epistem. He doesn't have any scientific knowledge in that sense. What he can do is he can give me the techniques. He understands that if I have this sort of pulse and I have this sort of orientation, I have, must have this imbalance in my body, and therefore he should have given me these herbs. He doesn't know why the herbs work. That's not part of the training. The way he learned traditional Chinese medicine is his father did it, his grandfather did it, his great-grandfather did it. And so it's no wonder the guy can read my pulse better than Dr. Lam, right? He's just been, he's done doing since childhood, learning how to read people's pulses. So there's the side of epistem and trying to differentiate. Plato actually got to epistem and techne, and the phronesis came in from Aristotle.
So where is the know what? I see all the other four W's and H, but where's the what?
The what would the I'm
know what?
I'm not I. It's kind of across all of them, and so I'm not trying to. I'm not saying these are the definitive descriptions because.
So know what would be in all three places.
I'm trying not to. So, when you were in epistem, you also say under conditions. These are the sort of things we understand in the science, right? So that we had a discussion before, which is a part of a what discussion, a bounding discussion. So I'm not saying that when you say know why, you don't have to know when and know where, right, and you don't have to know how. I'm just saying that as a way of trying to bridge to remember, unless you guys want to go back and read the philosophy. try to do that. Go ahead, John.
Just a suggestion now, since you have the same word there, pragmatic and pragmatic for the two.
Yes.
And what I'm thinking is, as you're saying, the emphasis on values is really important in phronesis. And in the, you know, we don't have a good word for it. In the Eastern philosophy, it would be dharma,
okay,
you know, which translates into like right action, doing the right thing, you know, as opposed to doing things right on one side, doing the right thing on the other side.
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe you could say appropriate.
Okay.
Would be a good term there. So you have universal, pragmatic, and appropriate, and that I think gets to your know what.
Okay.
Know what the right thing to do is. So it does engage.
Or maybe utilitarian.
Utilitarian has a very, you know, valueless connotation.
Value-based.
I think appropriate is the best, because it says, what's appropriate in this circumstance?
Proprietary.
It implies to me that you're going to consider human values.
But it's not really as opposed to
societal
values. It's because they're both pragmatic, so it's, and Aristotle called them both practical virtues.
I don't think it's pragmatic at all. I think phronesis is...
Let's do this in the breakout groups, okay? Because this is where I'm actually not defining stuff. I'm using the words and the references are all at the bottom. Because I'm not a philosophy major. And the other problem we run into, as Gerhard has brought out, this stuff was written in Greek. And then translated Greek to English. And it's kind of like, okay, you know, you have an Indian view of it. So I'm just trying to get us in the ballpark.
I really think appropriateness was captured.
Okay. Yeah.
The one thing I say also, this is another thing that in other later works, that fairly recent works, have been considered a cycle, one building on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And when we've talked in MBSE before, the systems engineers, which is a great question, they saw these. They saw these pieces. They might not have been using the Greek, you know what I mean, nomenclature, but, you know, roughly the same, you know, nomenclature. And they said, well, this is really a cycle, but as you said, we need the thing at the end.
Yeah.
Because of the world we live in, this is what we need. That's them speaking. In other words, this is what we want, not. And the question science asks, when you look at the whole picture, would be, what do they need? They may be wanting that, but if you look at the failure of our ability to solve some of our bigger problems today, the truth is linking these may be what they... Science may have to answer the whole picture more, instead of, this is science, this is classic.
Okay, so from there, go down on the blog post. There's actually descriptions that I extracted from, and again, the philosophy is more at the bottom. And so then trying to get into, well, how do we do systems? So I took the episteme, techne, and phronesis, and I've aligned them. Now, again, you can disagree with this. Systems theory, systems method, and systems practice. Okay, now this is a leap, but trying to make this, again, trying to say know why, know how, and know where. And so thinking about these, if I think about, well, what is systems theory? And this is where I hope to fill in with maybe a little bit of the bookcase introduction. If it's actually a place where it has theory, so living systems theory, James Brewer, living systems, is part of episteme. It's hierarchy theory, and so Alan all write about that. Open systems theory, so Marilyn Emmon writes about that. Viable systems model, Stafford Beer, I would say, is part of that. The inquiring systems work is part of episteme.
Well, I would debate about beer.
Yeah, that's okay.
In the next column.
That's fine. I'm fine to debate.
Okay.
Critical systems theory, resilience, and the panarchy stuff is I find over here. And then in the middle category, on systems method, I put in systems dynamics, soft systems methodology, interactive planning, action research, structured dialogic design, strategic assumption servicing and testing, search conference, deep dialogue. And so this is not an exhaustive list. This is kind of the sample, which you guys can try out and like or not like. And so the question about, well, what is it that is in systems practice? And so this is more phenomenologically based, and so language action perspective. Now, this is stuff that is not well integrated. I'm trying to, this year, we'll have some of the people at the ISSS meeting trying to take an attack at that. Appreciative systems, Jeffrey Bickers does value systems, social process. Alexander Laszlo, I would argue, and Katia work in evolutionary development, which I believe is in the domain of systems practice. And there's a systems intelligence lab at Aalto University, and they've been doing work, Ryan Mohamalainen and Asa Saarinen. And I finally figured out that's where I would place them, because they've been doing this stuff, I had to figure out what it is. And so that's...
David, now you've confused me a bit, because where would you place things like Blanchard's book, which is a description of how to do it?
I would put it in the middle column.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Where would John Warfield show up?
So he has theory and methods. So
So he's kind of in two columns.
He's in two columns. Some of his work in one column is in the other. Yeah.
I think a lot of people would disagree with it because, of course, they, you know, there's like beer. You know, it's not that it's without theory, and it's not that it's theory without practice. It's like Warfield, theory oriented toward practice.
Yeah, but I put disintegration more into the middle column than I would into the left column.
Well, wouldn't disintegration be in the right column? Or no, it was very systematic. One thing you haven't mentioned is the middle is systematic and the right is systemic, because that's another distinction that many, as you've been saying, about when people talk about systems, some people mean systematic, and some people mean systemic. And I think the Laszlos, for example, are very little interested in the systematic and very strongly interested in the systemic.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting pairing in terms.
Yeah.
So, Bud, where would you put your book? One column
probably,
or two?
I would say mostly in two, but some of them one as well.
Where would you put your book?
Probably more.
And also
one,
three as
more
well.
One. That's what I thought about.
And a bit in three.
Yeah,
actually.
Also. And I would almost put. I'm thinking of Eberhard Repton and Meyer system architecting in the third column, because they're in the heuristics. Which is like, we don't care why, we just know these heuristics work.
Yeah.
Okay. So it seemed like there's a meta level.
These tables are not in this blog.
They're in the second blog.
Yeah.
Oh, I missed the blog.
There's more than one blog.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I missed that. Thank you for the explanation.
So it's on coevolving.com. So there's a target for you to discuss. Then the question is, okay, so, you know, again, why is this group doing it? And so what I was thinking about is one way of thinking about this is think about gaps. And so we have system thinking, but they're not complete. So what happens if we have someone who has epistem, they're proficient epistem and technique, but they're not, they're lacking in phronesis? And so what I'd say is that this is like a scientist, right? So a scientist that works in a lab, and they have some research methods, but they've never done anything real. And so, okay, so they're weak on know when, know where, know whom. And a potential path might be deduction. You're working hard through fourth year Pierce. And so what happens if you have someone that's got technique and phronesis but no epistem? This is like by practitioner in Chinatown. He doesn't know why, and so you need to build the why, build the science for him. And there's a third case, okay, so they're strong in epistem and phronesis, but they're weak in technique. And so this, to me, is actually a scientist working with someone in the field without an engineer, because they have no method. They can do it the first time, but it works, but they don't know if they can replicate it. So you guys can think about permutations, about, you know, what it is that the systems engineering community needs, because I assume that everyone has some idea or some appreciation of systems, but they're not, seems that they're not necessarily where you want them to be, so where's the gap and how much you get there?
So it looks like three pathologies then.
Right. And again, thinking of this as more of a cycle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's you know, there is a pathology in each cyclical step, in each state. Mm-hmm. The three states, let's say that there's just these three, and everything is about closing these states. Most of the work right now in modeling is in column one, column two. Most of the new books in modeling in the systems area start in column two, and right, they're trying to get into column one. There's much more written in column two, written on a so-called a craft or practice base of modeling, and there's a huge gap in understanding fundamentals of science in complex systems in order to support the middle column. And then there's a huge gap on the right side. So there's one person's opinion, the value modeling part of it. How do you get to value types of dynamics, value dynamics that allow people who have to make the value decision to be smarter at common sense, to make their common sense better. But so in other words, one person's opinion. There's a gap in each one,
mm-hmm,
and we've got a lot more work going on in the middle right now than we've got almost any place else if you talk to modeling community. Mm-hmm.
John?
Just to further my previous comment to fill out the three-part division here, on the right side, the way you're describing it is still kind of weak on the value side.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're just looking at, okay, for the Oracle, Wikipedia.
Yeah. What you tell your students never to do, right?
Yeah. Actually, I really respect Wikipedia. It seems to be right on most of the time, but
yeah,
you have
yeah
to watch. But anyway, it says phronesis, practical wisdom. So it's the
wisdom. Yeah,
you see, and on that third column there, it's distinct from pragmatism, which doesn't have that component. Pragmatism doesn't distinguish fact from value. So to get there, I would say that's intuition.
I'm not going to argue philosophy.
But anyway, what I'm saying is on the right side, instead of abduction, I would say this is intuition. This is where you have experience and wisdom.
Tacit knowledge.
Exactly, tacit knowledge.
Right.
And you're going, look, I'm an expert in this field, trust me. You know, I know how this, you know, I can't explain
yeah
it.
Right.
I don't have the technology, I don't have the theory to tell you that this is what needs to be done, but I've done this 1,000 times before, and this is the way to go about it. See, this
yeah
is the practical wisdom.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, well, also tapping the same oracle a little
yes
further down the page. there's a quote from Aristotle.
It's our task as academician to explain, to ingest it and explain to these practical guys what they did actually get it.
Yeah, right.
That's our.
So a lot of times you start on the right and then you back up. You say, okay, now how can I explain this in technical and scientific?
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah,
you know, you start off knowing.
Yeah.
And
yeah
then we put it
well
up to.
Actually, you don't start out knowing.
Yeah.
The point I was going to say is that when you first ask, when you put these up there, what is it that systems engineers want from system science? Okay, you asked that question,
mm-hmm,
and you put up the three categories, and I started thinking to myself, well, it depends upon what stage of my career I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are points in my career when I just want to know how. When I'm younger, I just, you know, somebody show me what to do,
mm-hmm,
and I want to know how. And then there are later on when I want to know how to apply that knowledge and how. When do I do it?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this deeper knowledge of why.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I have all of that? And Aristotle recognized that too. Again, this is what's further down the page. He says that phronesis comes with age.
Mm-hmm.
that in his words, whereas young people become accomplished in geometry and mathematics, as his example, and wise within these limits, prudent young people do not seem to be found.
No.
It's something that comes with age as we begin to somehow connect the things in life to be able to understand when something is appropriate and when it isn't.
Exactly. And that goes back to David's association of the when, know when, know where, know whom, those, that's the essence of, oh, yeah, I think you just missed it.
Yeah, okay.
There, okay.
Don't you just love pop-ups?
Dave, when, this is over, 10, 15 years ago, when Bob Flood and Mike Jackson were writing, and they had the process of, there was critical systems thinking, and out of that there was a, at that time, the total systems intervention was the practical part of critical systems thinking. Now Mike's dumped that, obviously, and it's just critical systems practice.
Mm.
There's no TSI. But TSI was crafted into the critical creativity mode, critical reflection, the whole process of the critique was in a circular process, and it was in tremendous detail. It brought in the whole process of critique and reflection and creativity. But when it was put out, everybody, yes, this is great, but if I have to go, I'm out with an organization and I'm doing this, we don't have the time to do this. So these could have been old folks doing it, but they still didn't have the time to be able to put that level of reflection and analysis into, you know, into everything that they did. They might be able to go home and do it on the weekend, but too late, or, you know, it just didn't work. It didn't work for them. We do need, and what they ended up with are calling positivist moments, get the job done.
Actually, I'm wondering, this might be picky, but go back down to where you were a moment ago.
It gets weaker as we go down, so.
Okay. Just stay here. Let's see, down at the, where you were saying the weaknesses, and
there. Yeah.
Okay. So isn't it it's the know why that phronesis is weak on, it's the,
yeah, well, so I think his columns are actually shifted. Now I recognize I'm writing it, but they're not aligned. So so phronesis was over here, and epistemotechny, but Candice wrote this.
I see,
yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, so I may, okay. If I wrote this
okay.
better, then I, re-
okay.
I
yeah.
restructure it.
Okay.
Yeah. But you guys can fix it. So that was number 4. I think I get down to this number 6. What else do I write down here? As I was doing all this work, I ran across Stuart Umpleby's work.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that are also in the complex systems working group, he's been writing about causality and how it works in the sciences. And so linear causality, circular causality, and complexity theory, and then reflexivity theory. And then this came to me that reflexivity theory, for those of you who are familiar with second order cybernetics, that's kind of where it fits in. But the participant is in the system, inside the system that you're defining. There's something going on in here about the advance in system science. This is where system science is moving, because we kind of have this history as we've been progressing through it. So I included that. And then, there are some other ties that come in that, and it's part of the stuff I'm trying to do in my presidency and part of what I'm trying to do in San Jose and bring in people. So there are some ideas that I had. So I'm again going back to systems thinking as a term. There's some stuff that I've been doing around action science. There's stuff around theory of practice, and there's stuff around social learning. And so the stuff around action research, for those of you who have done double loop learning and Chris Ardris's stuff, that's kind of frozen. The original research was done in 1985. If you're working with Schoen at that point, and so you have espouse theory and theory and practice and those sorts of stuff. So there's some potential to bring some of that back in. I like Bourdieu, and so Bourdieu has all of these things around theory of practice, and this was around. He's done all these studies about practice, and again, this is trying to attack the question of what is practice, and if you go that direction, you'll probably end up hitting Bourdieu. And he has the three ideas of habitus, capital, and field, and now we're deep into social theory. So habitus is intersubjective. Capital is not like Marx, but it's the ability to what you can do with what you have. Let me try telling stories around this instead.
Competence or something.
Well, yeah, let me try some stories, and then you can go off and read Bourdieu, deciding whether it's worthwhile to pursue or not pursue. So habitus is a predisposition. The way that I use this has often to do with the ideas of knowledge and what people have built into culture. And so in the original Bourdieu, when he wrote Algeria in 1961, he has a group of French anthropologists and scientists who go into Algeria, and they're trying to help Algeria. And what they discovered, essentially, as the story goes, is that Algeria, they had some hilly land, and so the simple answer was do terrace farming, right? Flatten it out and do terrace farming. Don't do it on these slopes. But none of the Algerian farmers would do that, and because it wasn't part of the way they understand farming. And so eventually years go by, and then one farmer starts doing it, and it works, and then the other farmers start copying him. So you end up with this idea of habitus, which is, it's not part of their knowledge base. It's outside of their knowledge. And so you can't tell a farmer how to do terrace farming if they've never seen terrace farming before. But after the first farmer has done it, and you have a series of farmers doing it, then it's within their body of knowledge, and now you have farmers talking to farmers, they go, I tried this terrace farming thing and it works. And they go, okay, I'll try it too. And so it has to be part of the understanding that is embedded within the person's embodied knowledge. The second story I'll give you on capital. The way that we talk about capital is you meet someone you never met before. And so you start off with the usual cocktail conversation. Hi, I'm David. Janet, how are you? I've never met you before. And it's like, and I say, what do you do? Oh, I'm president of the Society of System Scientists. She goes, oh. I do something in systems. And so what's happened is I put a chip on the table. Mm-hmm. She puts a chip on the table. And it's like kind of, I'm working on something in ACOF. He goes, I've read some ACOF, I don't like that. It's like, well, that's interesting. So she puts a chip on the table. And what happens is that we end up with this chips that start piling up. And then we start get to the level where we can actually start discussing stuff because we have shared capital. We understand each other and we can exchange. Now, I was talking about me and my hairdresser. That's really tough. Like, I put in one chip, and it's like, she doesn't recognize that chip. Put in another chip, doesn't recognize that chip. So she and I don't share the social capital that I have in research, and to her, I'm just another customer cutting hair. That's the value statement. So, I could be Einstein, and she'd be cutting Einstein's hair, right? It doesn't make any difference. There's no capital there. The third idea of field has to do with struggles that happen within organizations, within social groups, and the way that they interact. And so when we were talking about disciplines before, disciplines are very much in what Bourdieu talked about in fields in terms of conflict, which is what is legitimate, what is not legitimate. So legitimacy plays a big part. One of the examples where I talk about legitimacy as an example of field, I do this actually in the Design Requiring Systems talk, which I think we're not going to do. I think we've probably had enough to absorb for a while. The idea of field, lost my train of thought. Okay, so let's talk about Western medicine versus Chinese medicine. Okay, so in Canada we had this interesting conundrum, which was we have socialized medicine in the Western sense, but the government does not pay for acupuncture. So if you want to pay for acupuncture, you pay for it yourself. And so, okay, then it comes down to, is acupuncture a legitimate form of medicine? Mm-hmm. So we come to the College of Physicians, and they have two choices. One is, no, that's not medicine, and therefore we can't license it and we shouldn't pay for it. The other one is, okay, acupuncture is legitimate, we don't understand it, but we want to license it. Now, how can you license something you don't understand? And should you be paying for something you don't understand?
Well, because he's been doing that with CSET for several years.
So these are fields. So Chinese medicine is a field, and there's a struggle against Western medicine, and it happens all over. It happens in universities big time with faculties that will do this and support that and not support that. It happens in all sorts of social activities. So those are the three ideas behind practice. And so when you start talking about practice as systems engineering, I don't know what practice means for you in terms of the struggles. So let's go through them. So inhabitus, what's the embodied knowledge that systems engineers have or should have or are supposed to have or you know, kind of all those sorts of things. You have the second part of capital. What is it that makes a valuable systems engineer, mm-hmm. right? And then the third one is, what are the struggles that happen in the recognition, because you have someone who's coming up with a new technique or a different method or something like that, and so people say that's not a legitimate way of doing engineering. Mm-hmm. So those are sort of things that you can think about. The last one, which is a long blog post, is around the work that A.K.M. Wenger has been doing on communities of practice. And it was interesting going back and rereading this, and eventually I'll get to the blog post, is that he's developed a social theory of learning. But when he talks about learning, you have to go back to the background. So A.K.A. Wenger was a researcher at the Institute for Research and Learning, which is a part of Xerox PARC. So you have people studying copiers, right? And so the whole book is about when he went out and he's studying insurance claim adjusters. So these are the people, when you file an insurance claim, they decide whether you get the money or you don't get the money in your claim. And it's one of those things, and you know, around software development, you know, want to go and get requirements and understand everything. Well, when he studied these insurance claim adjusters, what he discovered is that they actually don't follow the rules. So if you're trying to do knowledge extraction and knowledge architecture sort of stuff, what they did was they discovered if you check off the box C, box J, and box F, then person gets paid. If you don't check those off, then they don't get paid. And so these are people that are subjective, and so they're paid to actually figure out whether it's fraud or it's a real claim, and they just go, you know, they tell each other, if you check off all these boxes, then people get paid. And that's the way that they actually process the claims. It was not, you know, to qualify that, that's not the way they did it. So he looks at a social theory of learning as part of social participation. And the book before that was written before this was called Legitimate Peripheral Participation. And so you have the idea of legitimacy, and for a systems engineer, you met a guy with a degree and you go, this guy's got all of the schooling, but he's not an engineer. He doesn't think like an engineer, you know, anyone that talks to him recognizes that. So what's it take to be legitimate? And then the peripheral participation that he was looking at had, in effect, to do with apprenticeship and acceptance into the community. So you have a novice coming in. He says he's a systems engineer, bringing him in. What is it that he would have to do to participate, to actually be an engineer? So he'd probably have to do engineering work. But then the peripheral has to do with being an apprentice. So what is it that he has to learn from the experts, the people that have been doing engineering for a long time, to become a real engineer? And so in that sense, he has these ideas. So first is meaning, the way of talking about our world. Okay, so this is when you get down to common vocabulary. So it's not just that you have the labels the same. When you say function, does everyone understand the same meaning of function? Right? Does everyone understand the same meaning of process? So there's an idea of meaning there. There's the idea of practice, which is a way of talking about the shared historical and social resources frameworks and and perspectives. So this gets, Wenger is heavily based off Bourdieu. And so when we say practice, when we talk about Bourdieu's theory in practice, you end up with those ideas, habitus, capital, and field. So, you know, do they have the predispositions of an engineer? So they walk on site and they start looking at the world a certain way. Do they have the capital? Do they have the knowledge base that people recognize that they have these skills? And then how is the field operating so that they align themselves with this part of systems engineering? So you're talking about model-based as an example, opposed to some other things. And how do those things work? Thirdly, community. So this is talking about the social configuration of where the enterprise are defined. And so talking about the insurance claim adjusters, to become an insurance claim adjuster, you have to be part of that community. So you can come on a job and be shunned by everyone because they don't like you, right? And then you're not actually there. So again, you could have someone who's got all the skill training as being an engineer, but is ostracized by the rest. And you're going, it's not really part of the community. Like, why is that? And finally, identity, the way of talking about the world. And so there's this very strong tie between the way that people do practice and the way that they identify themselves. So I've recently changed jobs. I'm now working, as I work at IBM, my day job, and I'm working with salespeople who are essentially engineers. And the more I work with them, and my son's also an engineer, the more I realize I'm a scientist because I don't look at the problem the same way. We go on site to a customer and they do all these things. They do the best practice stuff. That's not what I do. I bring in epistem and I go, why are we looking at this problem? And so as part of my identity, I never try to say I'm an engineer, and I come to the COSI meetings and I actually will admit to you I am not an engineer. I don't have the predispositions that make me an engineer. I don't have the training that makes me an engineer. I don't work in the communities that are an engineer. Now, I work with engineers. I tend to work in a scientific mode. So you've got this coupling between practice and the way I learn and all these sorts of things, and these things are all tied in together. So that's the blog post that took, I started writing it in November. I published it earlier this week on trying to piece together something that you could have a conversation about. So we're going to break and go back to the instructions. Okay. So the idea was have this lecture, kind of set it out. What we want to do is go into breakout groups and come back at 4:00. Okay.
Well, lunch is in 45 minutes.
Yes. So you can.
You want to break out a little bit before lunch?
Yes. So you can get organized. You can go for lunch together. You can talk over lunch. You can come back to this room. You can go if the weather is nice. You can go outside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But the way that I want you to have the conversation. So firstly, I want you to work with people you don't know well, okay? And secondly, I want you to start off with the generative dialogue, which is spend time understanding each other. And so now when we start talking about practice, it's like the identity, the meaning, all these sorts of things start coming up. Why is it that this person speaks this way? That sort of stuff. And then have a dialogue and try to fill out these type of forms, okay? Central question. So based off what you've heard in the lecture and whatever else you want to bring into the conversation, for the system science working group, what are the questions that we should be working on? And if this originally it was around towards a common language of system practice, right?
Praxis,
yes.
Right.
Oh, yes. So we saw the practice thing, which yeah, if you I'll tell you, if you do the Google search on phronesis and praxis, it's helpful. So, because what I found is that praxis is phronesis in action. That's the short definition, but you have to read it yourself and translate your own Greek.
Okay, so how would you suggest we break up into three groups? Self-selection,
self-organization. It's a
and there
good
were
system.
What, 15 people?
Five people each. So would you mind if I make it random?
Yeah.
So we could go around and one, two.
Okay, so yeah, so
go around and just say 1, 2, 3, and then you're.
No, let's do it this way. So one group in that corner, one group in that corner, and one group up here. So just distribute yourself however you want, and that's your group.
Okay.
His idea of randomizing.
I'm not sure.
No, I think that is random, because if you start doing numbers, then people are sitting in specific positions.
Yeah, but
so.
People.
You know, one,
your,
two,
your method,
three.
My choice is going to be just
I suggest we just number people and then 1, 2, 3, and then that's how you get assigned.
You're doing a second column for you. You're doing technique. I'm going for phrenesis.
Right.
He's doing percussion. You're doing goo.
Yeah.
It's
going
to take us 45 minutes to.
No, let's get up, and one group in that corner, one group in that corner, one group up here, and try, and so you two are not working together. So you're not. So I know already that you two are going to be in separate parts of the room.
That's why when you know
that was the one thing we decided to be working.
Well, if you do three, then if we do that, then John and John and Dan will be working together.
Okay,
which is not necessarily
1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Okay, so which way are we going to do this?
Let's do it my way. I'm going to take control.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm up here.
And the facilitator has judged.
I'm up here also.
Okay, two back corners.
I'll go down in this corner.
I'm in this corner.
Okay, so I'll actually get up.
This is my corner.
I see an underlying energy principle.
Yeah. Minimization of energy.
Minimization of energy.
Have
a
morally
separate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
See,
are you
already picked?
We're a corner.
It's going to
your
fault.
It's just good to know to induce each other.
I see we got all four of them in one corner. That's not going to work.
No one's in that corner yet.
I thought part of the rule.
That
corner's
full,
and
this corner's full.
Me and John are here. Oh, we have a lot to argue about.
So there's what, about three of us? About four or five in each group?
I picked the corner regardless of which way we were going to.
Michael, can you change with one of that group?
Sorry?
Who's Michael?
Which Michael? Michael, that's Michael here. So Michael needs this.
No, we still need another one in this group anyway.
I'm going to be traded.
We still need one more illustrator.
For a modest fee.
Join this one.
For any fee.
You guys should have one of either David or Michael and swap one person out. I think worth it at all.
Right. Michael, do you want to go with Gerhard's
group? Can we have... My corner
I'll
group.
I'll take bids.
Stay here, so we.
You got two. You got two and three. You
yeah.
Got what? Four and one. You've got.
We got five.
We're
So Lance not coming back?
He said he had to go.
I will be gone part of this afternoon too.
So you got four, five, and five.
We have five.
I'm in this.
David.
We can't have Jennifer and. John and
the facilitator was above the group. So if you're going to be in it, that's good.
No, you're our
I'll join you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bob, over there. Okay. Because you're leading, so you'll end up with four.
Yeah.
And we'll be four. You got five. Yeah. Okay. No, go over there. Yeah, you're over there. No, we want to split the marital bond.
Yeah, that's the only thing that everybody's sure of.
I have
the only thing they agree on. Yeah, no, I guess. Yeah, I'll go over there. You go over there, guys. No, you were going to go there.
Don't go domestic.
It doesn't. No, that's fine. I just thought we were. Yeah, I'm still here, but yeah, I'm still here. And now I'm going back to my seat.
Okay.
Okay. So we have. These four, It's going to be four for forest order.
So let's gather chairs.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Actually, I had a request. I don't know. Maybe it's.
Bottom me or each of the 1.5 bills.
Since
we're 4.5,
you're on the web. I was hoping that you could show people the the IIGSS streams of systems thought chart.
I don't know where it is. If you want to bring it up,
I'm going to have to talk about it. You
want to bring it up? So we can come back here at 4 o'clock.
At 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Ready to present.
This is
where are we going to do our work? Here or somewhere else?
I would prefer somewhere else. But
now, it's preferable that you upload your presentation to that wiki page. That way we don't have to swap computers. And then we have a record of it.
And we'll just keep emailing them our results, right?
That won't work. You know, doing a web end to a pub to hear.
What are you looking for?
The second one is what I click. Oh, this one. It must be this one.
Here's the question. We can stagger back and forth.
But Janet, you're trying to add something else to what David had, and he had us turned loose now.
Right. What I wanted people to get a chance to see this on the big screen because it was just small.
Everybody's misdirecting from it.
Well, you can get it from SlideWorld. You just have to download it.
How did I have the question?
You can get it from the second one.
You know how to get the audio working?
So yes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Got a good idea.
Or at least I've gotten it there recently.
So you might want to just test run the jack.
Okay, got it. Anyway, it's a really beautiful thing. If you have a big screen, then people can see all the connections.
But what I mean is, set it up, record it,
there you go.
And then check to see if it recorded without.